The Survivor Specialists are back, and today it's myself and Blake, and we are going to be talking about Aubrey Bracco's journey on Survivor. We thought that this would be a fun podcast. This is going to be audio only, so you're listening to this over on Red Circle or Spotify or any of that fun stuff. Congrats. This is all for you. So, Blake, we just had Aubrey win about a week ago. When we're putting this out, it will be a week ago. We're doing it the day before. But about a week ago, Aubrey Bracco wins.
About a week ago.
Survivor Season 50. And I really do think that her journey is one of the most interesting in the history of the show, which is why I think we can do a full podcast on this. There's other winners from this season. Like, if Jonathan had won, we're not doing an hour-long podcast on Jonathan. Like, it's just not going to happen. There's not enough to cover. But I feel like Aubrey's journey is really interesting. And for people who haven't watched Survivor continuously since Aubrey started, because I know there's a lot of people who are COVID babies, essentially, who showed up during COVID and then just kept watching, binged everything. And you don't really understand what the conversation was like in 2016, what it was like in 2017 when she played again in Game Changers, what it was like again in 2019 when she was on Edge of Extinction, and now ultimately, like, why there was hype or no hype for Aubrey coming into the season and how people feel. So, Blake, you always consider yourself a little bit of a historian, an academic. Is there, I know that we would have all had more satisfying winners in our minds, but is there a more satisfying, like, multi-season arc at this point in Survivor history than the one we just saw from Aubrey?
I mean, I do think if you were around for the Boston Rob one, he won on his fourth time, and maybe is more most people's speed of the show. Of like, are you more of a Rob fan or are you more of an Aubrey fan? And I feel like it would be not a no-brainer, but more people have been around for the Rob stuff. He met his wife. Oh, my gosh. He comes back and wins against Russell in the Screw You season, because he failed so miserably in Heroes versus Villains, but he makes his two final tribal things and wins finally. So, like, I think it is there's only two people that won on their fourth try, I think, and yeah, it's Rob and Aubrey. So I think when we say we can craft these things like this, these are the two people we can. And Aubrey's just happens over 11 years. Rob happens from 4 to 22. So if we do that math, 22 minus 4 is 18, years. 9 years. I think that's something where you're like, oh, damn, why isn't she on Mount Rushmore right away? And you're like, I just don't know if she did it as sexily, or as sexy is the right word. Or
as sexily. There we go. Yeah. 3 minutes in and Blake's invented a word. Here we go.
And I think there's something where everybody has their favorite Pokemon, and you're like, you even like Combi? And it's like, everyone has their favorite Survivor player. But, like, how many people are saying their favorite player is Aubrey? And I think maybe when we rewatch 50 in 6 months, or what is that? We're probably going to do it in a year and a half on Every Season Matters.
Yeah, a little bit
more. I think what sucks about this season being kind of not spoiled, but like, pay attention to these five people. Even the first couple episodes of Aubrey on 50, she was literally like Eeyore. And it's like, I don't think this is going to come around and be more like, when you're paying attention, she's, to her in early 50, she is killing it. Yeah. Which is a weird way to start all this, but I think Aubrey is very interesting to me for a certain couple of reasons. She is the first person to light the world on fire. I do think 32 is the most contested. It came up as a thing for us of, what's the winner's legacy? Would you rather have other people win or not? If you're paying attention to Every Season Matters, which you are, because this is in the Patreon section of this.
This is the Patreon. This is on Spotify.
Oh, God. Cool. So what's
now Blake has to be nice. He thought that he could be a total dick.
No. It's more of like, so if you're not aware of what we do on Every Season Matters, that's what I would do here, is like, every single season we go, would you rather have somebody else win or not? And I think that is the most public one ever, of where you would tie fan. Okay, that's kind of weird. But there was Aubrey fans that were like, how did Michelle win? Michelle did nothing. Oh my God, Michelle sucks. And there is some thought process of there's a lot more nuance in that. What does Survivor mean? Yes, we could have the Russell versus Natalie White conversation, but it's actually more fun to have the Aubrey versus Michelle conversation because they probably had the same amount of win equity and they probably could play seven times and do seven final tribals and have seven different juries. And instead of one of them going 7-0, I think Michelle wins 4-3 over those 7 times.
And that's where like this whole conversation kind of branches from, right? Because we're talking about Aubrey Ko-Rong, massive popularity. And I don't think if you binge watch the seasons, you understand how massively popular Aubrey was. Now, I just rewatched the season because for Every Season Matters, as Blake has mentioned now a couple times, third episode coming out tomorrow. Rewatching Ko-Rong, Aubrey, everybody says how lucky Michelle gets because of Joe's medevac. Aubrey gets even luckier with Niels because Aubrey is literally going home in that moment. People are like, oh, it sucked for Aubrey that Neil went because that was her losing an ally. The alternative was Aubrey being voted out. And pretty much everybody from that cast knows and has stated that Aubrey was going home that night. And for anybody who thinks Neil was going to play an idol for her, Neil didn't even give her the idol when he was out of the game. So what makes you think he was going to be so selfless that he was going to suddenly give her the idol while she's still in the game? There was no shot. Aubrey's going home there. But that was the conversation on a week to week, because week to week we were hearing from Aubrey a lot more. I brought up the confessional counts because I love to talk about this. Through the first 6 episodes, Aubrey and Michelle were even. They both had 13 confessionals, which is really crazy to think about because, I'm sorry, Aubrey had 10 through the first 6 episodes and Michelle had 13. And that's really crazy to think about because Michelle didn't go to a single tribal council through the first 6 episodes of the season. Michelle got a lot of screen time at the end, but it was kind of that early merge portion. The Neil getting pulled from the game, the Nick Mariano boot, the Debbie boot, especially where Aubrey really took over. And that's when people said, oh, Aubrey's playing a much better game. I always said, and I said it back then and I'll say it now, I never felt that Michelle was under edited in any like crazy way. And I'm pretty sure I saw earlier today that Michelle's edit is actually bigger than Aubrey's edit on this season, the season that she wins. So that is also fascinating. But if you weren't there, you don't understand how contentious this was. Like, you really don't get it. This was, other than Natalie and Russell, I agree with you. I think this is the second most contentious in the history of the show. Rob and Amber probably would have been more contentious, but because they got married, nobody cared. And the other thing is, you mentioned Rob, how satisfying he is as Redemption Island winner. I think a lot of Boston Rob fans were very satisfied with that. But overall, that's the least satisfying season in the history of the show because you're watching Rob just walk over a bunch of recruits who had no idea what game they were stepping on the island for. And it's such an unbelievably boring season. Part of that is because of how Rob dominates, but the other part is just because the cast is terrible. And so when Rob dominates that season, I feel less good about that than I do about Aubrey winning a more subtle strategic social game that she does in season 50. I think 50, it's more competitive. There's just a lot more going on and there's more for her to navigate. And Rob had it even easier, especially once Russell went out of the game. Cause once Russell was out, I mean, then it's just like, guys, I can never team up with him. We're just going to keep going. Don't worry about it. So this whole 2016 era, if you go back and listen to the podcast that Will and I were doing back during that time, nobody thought Michelle had a chance in hell of winning. But I kept saying, no, they're giving her screen time. They're giving her screen time. They're giving her screen time. And the show was edited differently back then than it is now, but they were giving Michelle screen time. They were letting her narrate stuff. The episode where, I guess it's Anna who goes home, Michelle is narrating that about how much danger she would be in if she went to tribal, but it was also about her social game, her with Nick, her with Kyle, her with, I think it was Debbie and Joe. And like, Sydney just talking about all those people in a moment that they didn't need to. But at the end of the day, whether Michelle should have won or Aubrey should have won, coming out of that season, which was also a spring season, which is crazy that Aubrey Bracco has only played spring seasons. She's played 4 times, only spring seasons. That's a weird fact. Coming out of that, that whole conversation the whole summer was Aubrey probably should have beaten Michelle. And that is where I think Aubrey's journey begins. And we'll get into like the confessionals and we'll get into this story. But that's where her story begins. And that's why what she does on Game Changers, what she does on Edge of Extinction, this kind of fall from grace to then just spike back up in 50. I do think that this is probably the most satisfying multi-season arc the show has ever had. Even if you're not a big Aubrey fan, this is kind of like the Chris Doherty thing for me. Just watch the story and say to yourself, how is that not scripted? Because the story is incredible.
And I think that's something where it's like, okay, let's figure out where I was in my Survivor watching. I even think Sydney had a shot to win Ko-Rong. And I don't know how unpopular that is to say that. But like, I think that is something where Joe goes at 5 and it's a holy crap moment because he's too old and ate too much. And it was like, Joe's supposed to be a goat spot. So now it's kind of like, oh crap. We're not going to have Aubrey get to the end with Joe and Ty. It's at least there's going to be 2 spots where we're going to have an actual battle. And that was very interesting when it was happening. And I do think there was something where it's like, well, Michelle's going to go home because she's not going to win the challenges. And then much like Aubrey wins that final 4 challenge, when Michelle wins the final 4 challenge in Ko-Rong over Sydney, Ty, and Aubrey, it is kind of like, oh shit, she did exactly what she needed to do to at least get to final tribal. So what I'm saying right now is, I think I was more team. What sucks is you're talking to the number one Michelle fan with Phil, but I was also kind of more, I like Ty than Aubrey and Michelle.
I mean, that's how my wife just was watching it right now. She was like, I love this guy. I can't believe you never mentioned him.
Ty is such a over the top character that we hadn't seen. I think it's something where inner beauty is showing, and it's whenever that's told to you on the second episode, and how interacting with Caleb, who I've seen be such a weird person on Big Brother, but he like not melts for Ty, but like the rough exterior gets away. Mark the chicken, like, are you out of your mind? So I think I was going in and realizing like, oh, Ty's not going to be able to win because it's kind of hard for him to explain everything. Because English is his second language here. Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing that pops in my head is meeting Aubrey in person or later on in life. Years later, it was kind of like, oh, she is nerdy. It's not that she's not cool, but it is something of, if you look at this jury, are they people that play Dungeons and Dragons? If you look at this jury, are these people that go out and get beers? If you look at this jury, are these people that are athletes or whatever? And it's like, I think they're just more Michelle speed. And that's something that I think you cannot really see from TV, no matter how good editors are, of sometimes you just like some people better. And does that make Michelle a better game player or not? I think it is something of what we said this literally on the recap last Wednesday of like, when you're playing Catan against someone or when you're playing Uno against someone, sometimes it's like, I don't want to play this draw 4 because I like them on them. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably lose. I should have played this draw 4, but like, I'm okay with Michelle winning. I won't play this draw 4 on her. Feels like what her jury kind of does, which is not game theory, and it's not playing to win, and it's not very sexy in a $1 million thing. But I think most of those people are like, yeah, I like Michelle better.
Well, and I think also that's what's, I think, the most interesting thing about watching Aubrey's 4 season arc. Michelle was a bartender coming to the first season. So Michelle was used to, I mean, she's a bartender in Jersey. You're going to get people who are coming in from North Jersey, who are coming down in the summer, who are unbelievably obnoxious. You're going to get your GTL, you know, Long Island, Staten Island people. That's going to happen. You're also going to get a lot of locals. You're also going to get people from Philly. You're also going to get people from, you know, the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, where there's like nothing going on. It's a little bit more like, you know, country. And New Jersey is a pretty broad spectrum for such a small state. People wouldn't realize that, but when you live there as long as I did, you get it. And Michelle, you know, she's used to, hey, this guy is a big pain in the ass, but I know how to get a tip from him anyway, because I need to. And Aubrey's job was social media manager at an early stage when social media was really just starting off. Aubrey's whole thing was find a way to connect with the audience that is out there that I don't have to visually look at. They just exist. And so for me, that's why I think Michelle gets the votes. And people try to discredit that and say, well, Kyle and Scott were never going to vote for Aubrey. They were so bitter. They had to vote for someone. And they appreciated the way Michelle treated them on the way out. And Aubrey didn't have that same care because I don't think she understood necessarily how to deal with them. And that's interesting to me because when you rewatch the season, when Julia's going out, Michelle's talking to Julia, Aubrey wants nothing to do with Julia. When Jason's going out, Michelle is talking to Jason, Aubrey wants nothing to do with Jason. When Scott is going out, Michelle is talking to Scott, Aubrey wants nothing to do with Scott. I think we see Aubrey and Scott speak to each other one time the entire season, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, Aubrey plays a solid game. Aubrey is more of the narrator of that season. You obviously have Ty, who's this massive character. He leads the season with confessionals. Aubrey ends up getting 70, though. But then what's interesting is we watch her go from a season where she has somebody like Joe, who's always going to be in her corner. She has somebody like Neil, who's always going to be in her corner. She has these people that she can just kind of waltz through the game a little bit with. And then we watch her on Game Changers. And in Game Changers, all of a sudden, everybody's kind of up to her playing field. And she keeps trying to go at Sandra a little bit. She needs to learn from Sandra, but she also wants to work with Tony and Sandra because they're threats. And what is she going to do? And all of these plans that Aubrey's putting into motion, sometimes they work, but more often than not, they don't. People forget that when JT went home, she wanted Michaela out. She voted with JT. Sandra's the one who flipped it. People forget she gets rid of Debbie and she feels good about that. At Final Seven, she wanted Troyzan out. Andrea goes home. So a lot was going wrong for Aubrey because the personalities, they were more aggressive. And she doesn't do well with aggressive personalities. At least she didn't at this point in her Survivor career. That's why she doesn't get the votes from Scott and Kyle. That's why she doesn't get a vote from Sydney, too, because Sydney's a lot more aggressive than people give her credit for. And I think that that was something that Michelle really mastered. And as Aubrey could do the scheming, the strategizing, but Aubrey had a harder time with the people that aren't naturally like her and bonding with them. And even Joe, I mean, of course, you know, the nerdy person is always going to be grandpa's favorite. Unless you're like an all-state athlete, grandpa's always going to like if you get straight A's on your report card. And I think that's where Joe and Aubrey really bonded. So that's kind of, you know, we're only into the first two seasons of Aubrey, but I feel like that is something that we really do see from her is this difficulty handling these massive, huge personalities, which is something she very much changed when she came out for season 50.
I also think the third time she comes around, it's like, okay, Edge of Extinction has, are they coaches? Not really. Are they leaders? Or what was the sell for them? And it's an older man and an older woman and a younger man and a younger woman. And so she's not going to get paired gender-wise and she's not going to get paired age-wise. So she gets paired with Joe Anglim, who is probably the Survivor fairy wand to just get to jury. And it was, if there's ever a vote out of this tribe, are we going to get rid of an annoying new player? But, oh, Aubrey has a target on her back for the first time. Like, yes, Aubrey maybe would have gone home when if we don't get rid of Neil. So that maybe that is another time she had a target. But, like, people know how good Aubrey is at playing the game now, and they kind of lock her out. They kind of don't involve her in anything. They kind of go above and beyond, treat her like they did Banu and Jessica on that season for the more recent people of like, we're going to lie to Aubrey on purpose and tell her all kinds of stuff. We're not going to let her know she's in danger because she could probably get out of it. I think Aubrey even has an idol and goes home with it, right?
She does, yeah.
Which is insane because it's such good gameplay from the newbies of like, if you've ever paid attention to any newbies and half newbies, half not newbies, the first one that ever didn't have one get to Final Tribal is Edge of Extinction. Uh-huh. And I think that was a very specific thing where we can't let any of these people get to the end because all four of these are loved people or Joe or whatever. Mm-hmm. So whether you love Joe or not. But I think it's something where when Aubrey is faced with that, she didn't roll over and die. She's still on Edge of Extinction, but she did have a hard time because somebody else who dealt with that was Wentworth. But Wentworth gets a little further, and it's not just Wentworth's actually losing immunity challenges. So it's something where has Aubrey always been impressive, but I think Edge of Extinction could be her Tony in Game Changer season, where it kind of like, hey, if you thought Aubrey was a major threat, watch her get owned, quote unquote, on Edge of Extinction. And then if Aubrey ever plays another All-Star season, we kind of cut her teeth off. And now she's not some snake viper person. She's like, somebody has shown you how to deal with Aubrey before.
Well, and the other thing too, though, so what was tough for Aubrey with Edge of Extinction was she's on with Joe, like you said. That tribe didn't want any of the returning players to do anything. And you're not going to vote out Joe in the pre-merge portion of the game. I mean, Joe goes that entire pre-merge pretty much with not being eligible to be voted out. And then you turn around and you see what was also hurting her was the fact that David and Kelly kept surviving, because then it's like, oh my God, if these four pair up, it's over. But her teeth are almost removed in Game Changers. Like in game, I think what was so impressive about Aubrey is she went from second place, a lot of people thought she could win, to fifth place in Game Changers. Now, early on in that season, Tony wanted Aubrey out second. So Aubrey very well could have gone the route of Sierra Easton, where it was like, you're actually a bigger threat than Sandra and Tony, and so we're going to get you out of the game. But she doesn't. She goes all the way to Final Five, but she never really feels like a threat in the game. So now it was almost like when they were on Edge of Extinction, the whole cast, the whole Kama tribe was able to sit there and say, we have seen Aubrey play this game really strongly and then watched her also play with a lot more blemishes. We can probably pull a fast one on her because she gets duped a lot in Game Changers. And I think that's why people felt more confident. I think that's why Victoria and stuff felt more confident just lying straight to her face for the entirety of the final episode that she's in. Because she had been kind of, I don't want to say played as a sucker, but that co-wrong cast was so into what Aubrey was selling, Game Changers wasn't, and Aubrey wasn't able to adjust to that. And I think that's where this Edge of Extinction cast really capitalized on that. I mean, I know Victoria was a really big fan of the show coming in, so that helped because she knew the game. Ron Clark is a big fan of the game. Julie was a big fan of the game. Gavin was a big fan of the game. Like, these are all people who really knew the game well. Eric Halfeman, I think, was a bigger fan of the game, but you're talking like Eric, Victoria, Gavin. Of course, they're going to be ready to vote off Aubrey. They don't want to let Aubrey get her feet under her because they know how dangerous she can be. Pull one over on her when she's feeling comfortable, because that's what people did to her the entirety of Game Changers. So like, her fangs were removed 1 year after how good she was, despite the fact that she goes to Final Five. I think that's what's also crazy is like, how often, I don't know if we've ever seen this, Blake, so I'm truly asking you this, maybe only Russell. How often have we gone from somebody where it's like, wow, their first time out, they should have won. They made it to Final Tribal. We thought they should have won. Their second time out, it's like, oh man, they never really seemed like a threat. Because even Amanda Kimmel felt like a threat for the majority of Micronesia.
I mean, they get rid of JT just because he's weirdo on Heroes versus Villains. Yeah. And then he's even weirder for Game Changers. But it is something that I think we've said a lot of, not negative stuff about Aubrey, but I think something for her Survivor career, like, what does she do better than everybody else? It's like, okay, outplay, outlast, or whatever. I think what's crazy is she voted out Suri at 6 and goes home at 5 in Game Changers. If Tiffany wins Final 5 immunity, that happens again, and we are like, wow, she didn't learn anything.
And we're sitting here with a very different edit saying she was never a threat.
Right. And so I think what she learned, and she's saying out loud, and it kind of sucks to say this about Survivor 50, Survivor 50 wasn't a clown fiesta, but it wasn't chess. Mm-hmm. It was somewhere in between.
What is a clown fiesta? Sorry, I have to ask that.
Clown fiesta is like we're making up rules every fucking turn, and like nobody has any clue. Okay. Like people are just going home because you had purple shoes on. You're eliminated.
Okay, that makes
sense. And like, I think 50's halfway in between clown fiesta and chess. Of like, I think Aubrey's really good at whether I'm in control or not. I'm making sure I'm never drawing dead. And I think you could literally be like, well, she lost a final tribal. That means she was drawing dead. No, I think a better answer or maybe a better conversation she could have had on that beach, she wins Koh Rong.
Yep.
And she could have won Game Changers, and she did win 50. So I don't know if she could have ever, like, come back from extinction and won what Chris Underwood did, but that is the season where somebody did it. If it's Aubrey and gets to the final with that kind of stuff, you'd have to give it to her too. But I think her thing is resilience and not rolling over and dying, which once again, isn't as sexy as Parvati or isn't as dominant as Rob or isn't as crafty as Tony or Sandra can just, hers is a different kind of resilience of it'll never be me that goes home. But I think Aubrey has the more indirect gameplay of that so far down where I would pay $50 to get into her brain of like, what is survivor strategy or whatever mean to you? Because I do think you understand it on a deeper level than 89% of players that have played.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm trying to look. So I think the resiliency thing is very much a really good argument with her. Because on day two, she's having the panic attack, having the breakdown in Koh Rong. And most people are like, she has no shot. I remember Will and I, we put her on the Phantom Tribe. We had thought she had no chance of winning that season. We had her 18th out of 18 when that season came out. And I do think Aubrey playing was kind of the shift of the archetype where all of a sudden the underdog woman started to become a little bit more dominant in these games. I mean, not that Hannah gets any votes at the end, but Hannah makes it to Final Tribal the next season. Aubrey again makes it to Final Five. You know, even in season 36, like, I don't know, Angela is a bit of an underdog. But Chrissy in 35. The whole thing is, though, I do think that, you know, Aubrey always finds a way to battle. But, you know, we've talked, like you said, we've talked a little bit more negatively, but I do think that her journey is a negative start. Like her Koh Rong game is positive. 70 confessionals in Koh Rong. Okay. In her second season, she gets 20. She makes it to Final Five of Game Changers and gets 20 confessionals. And people talk about Troyzan. He'll never play Survivor again. Troyzan and Aubrey make it to the finale. Troyzan only gets 6 fewer confessionals than Aubrey. Like people will say, well, Troyzan wasn't really relevant to the season. He pretty much was the same level of relevance to Aubrey, and Aubrey gets asked back 2 more times after that. So, like, that's why I always say never with any players. But she gets 20 confessionals in her second season, makes Final Five. In her third season, she gets 24 confessionals. But this is pretty much how Survivor felt about her. After Rick Devins got back into the game, or no, not after he got back into the game. Yeah, after he got back into the game, Aubrey goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 episodes, the final 7 episodes, with 3 confessionals. That's it. Just 3. And other people on Edge of Extinction were getting screen time. So it was like Aubrey goes from this 70 confessional strategic powerhouse, should have won against a really big cast, to 20 against an all-returning season where she's wrong more often than she's right, to 24 in a season where 8 of those confessionals are essentially her talking about how she thinks she's going to be good to go, and really it's her getting voted out because it's all right before her boot in that one episode, whatever episode she ultimately goes home in. So that's where it's like, well, how can you talk about Aubrey negatively? It's like, we have seen players throughout Survivor history come out, have a great first run, be really entertaining. They come out the second time and they're a waste. I mean, Chrissy Hoffbeck kind of falls into that. And I think a lot of people would agree. A lot of people thought Chrissy should have beaten Ben. I was never on that train, but a lot of people thought Chrissy should have beaten Ben. Chrissy comes back the second time, barely hear from Chrissy, don't really know much about Chrissy. Like, these are things that happen to Survivor players. And again, the reason why I find Aubrey's story to be satisfying is because you actually did go through like a movie script, right? They always say act one is the buildup. You're setting the stage for the character. And there's the act one turning point. The act one turning point for Aubrey was her losing final tribal council to Michelle. And now she's going through the first half of act two. And that's game changers. And she doesn't really know what's going on. And you're going through. And that's your first half. And then you have like another little turning point. And then Edge of Extinction, she gets the call. She's going to go back one more time. And that is the all hope is lost moment for her, is Edge of Extinction. And she's as low as it gets going into act three. And her act three was Survivor 50 and winning the season. And so, like, again, I'm like, it's not scripted, but it almost feels like it is. And so I don't know how I completely got here, but I just think it goes to like Aubrey. It has to start a little negative because she was the fan favorite America's sweetheart to, you know, irrelevant. I mean, Blake, after Edge of Extinction, did you ever think you would see Aubrey again? Another question, after Game Changers, did you ever think you'd see Aubrey again?
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshals Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
I mean, that's the thing where I'm like, even arguing right now is like, why are we watching Aubrey a fourth time instead of the people that deftly outplayed a legend? And it's like, is Aubrey just fits in old school family values for our host wants people who aren't going to yell at each other or be too over the top or have a squeaky clean image? And you're like, well, Aubrey fits into that more. Is Aubrey one of the most dynamic players that I need another season from? And I think that's where some frustration comes in for not just our podcast, but my mind is like, I think if you lined up all 12 women, it's like Aubrey is my 11th favorite or 11th most excited to watch for. Cause it's like, usually when you get absolutely owned, you're not asked back. And I don't know how to describe Aubrey's Edge of Extinction game besides getting absolutely owned. And normally there isn't the fourth season where she proves you wrong and wins. And I think it's something where, did Aubrey prove us wrong? And that's a weird thing, because you could also argue, like, Aubrey wins against these specific two or three people. And it's like, well, Aubrey knows that. And that's something where you're like, how much of this is like, damn, she's really good. And how much of this is just how Survivor works in 2026. Mm-hmm. And you're like, damn, I want somebody to clobber a season and be in charge, not just outlast everybody, and everybody else is like, whether they're misogynistic sometimes or whether they're not quite aware of how Survivor works as a game. You're like, whenever that layer comes in and helps you win, that's an alley-oop for your slam dunk as a win. Mm-hmm. It feels less cool as a win.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm still going through. And so I had mentioned earlier, like, you know, Aubrey has one of the smallest edits in the history of the show for a winner, 41st out of 50. That's where she ranks in terms of edit. And this was season 50.
So who are the nine worst?
Danny Boatwright, Erica. You ready for this one? Parvati Shallow.
What?
Denise Stapley. Sophie Clark. Sandra Diaz-Twine from Heroes Villains, Vesepia, Bob, and Natalie White. And this is going based on percentage of edit. So, like, essentially, this is that one where it's 0% means you're perfectly evenly edited. So, you know, Parvati Shallow has 32 confessionals on her winning season, which is, you know, Denise has 37, but the average on Denise's season was higher. So that's what this is essentially saying. Aubrey was 12% below the average on this season. Michelle, 1% above the average on Ko Rong, the closest to an even edited winner in the history of the show. In terms of the winner compared to the rest of the cast, she's actually the closest. So she actually was the most evenly edited winner in the history of Survivor. But it's just a small edit compared to the rest of winners, because Michelle ranks 34th on this list. Just ahead of Tina Wesson, Dee, Aris, Amber Berkich, Gabler, Underwood. Dee surprises me there, but I think that's because it was the hour and a half episodes.
So Aubrey starts the bottom 10.
Yes, she has worse edit than Underwood.
What's crazy to me, because I don't think we can say all that data and then walk away without saying this, I think Survivor would care about her more if she was a dude. If she was a dude, we'd be like, I'm so excited to see Aubrey play again. That one season was bullshit. They didn't work with him. And I think that is something where, whether you like politics or how gender comes into your favorite thing, it's aware, like, 9 out of 10 bottom edited winners are women.
You ready for this, Blake?
The other one is Bob, who's like
16 of the 17 top edits are men. Kim Spradlin's the only woman in the top 17.
And so you're like, oh, do you not care about Aubrey because she's not entertaining? Or is it, it's kind of hard to show Aubrey's relationships with people because she's not like I mean, they didn't even do it for Parvati that well. Like, you can't even be like, if you're going to flirt and dominate and eat people's bones like Parvati, it's easier to show. It's like, no, that's not what happened. And maybe it's like, hey, if you're on a season with Suri, we'd like to spend a lot of time with Suri in interviews. Like, that's just what's going to happen to Parvati, Aubrey, Sarah Lucina. I don't know. All the
Sarah is the only other woman in the top 20.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's something where you're like, because now we are at 21. So 21 female winners and 29 male winners after 50 seasons. 20,
yeah. Well, so it's 22 women total.
Like Sandra won twice. Yes, yeah, got it. 21 unique versus 28 unique men. Mm-hmm. Is that how that works? No, yes. It should be 48. It should be 48 winners total. So 21 unique versus 27 unique men. So there's only six more men winners than women. So we're getting there. But I do think, why am I mentioning this stuff? I think Aubrey is one of the best five female characters legacy wise, but unfortunately when we can't do stuff like edit people appropriately, being the fifth best woman doesn't have you very high up in the history and legacy of the game.
And it's crazy.
Like, kind of sucks.
She ranks 14th out of 22 for women. So you'd be like, oh, cool. Like a middle tier win. And it's like, no, she's bottom 10. Yeah. She's bottom 10. Like, but Aubrey with a worse edit than Gabler and Underwood and Amber is crazy.
And like, what do you want Aubrey to be like excited those first 6 days? And then you can be like, oh, we'll edit her appropriately. Or like, I think that's something where it's like, is it time to overhaul how the editing works for the show? And like, maybe that's the drop the first number, keep the one new era thing that we could do of like, hey, you've seen Survivor 50 seasons worth of 13 episodes each. You know exactly how every single beat of story is going to be presented. I'm not saying hire 15 more women, hire 15 more women editors, but maybe just completely change how you do things now. So we can get different stories out there, or like, no, it is fun to see these stories, not just a man got an idol and a man is going to talk about his idol in every episode, even though the man doesn't use his idol till final five.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, Rizzo's talking about it nonstop. I think, so if we were to look at the winners at war confessional count. Oh God, we're not winners at war. Why did I just say winners at war? Survivor 50. I just X'd out of it because now I'm distracted. If you look at this season, Aubrey had 47 confessionals. Rizzo had 51. Like, and what was Rizzo's story compared to Aubrey's? And so that's where it's also like crazy though with Aubrey's edit, because she goes from people wanted her to win, thought she should have won, whatever, quiet in Game Changers, quiet in Edge of Extinction. Then she gets her win. And it's like you're saying, the show's not even really celebrating this to the level that they could have been. They could be celebrating Aubrey's win for 50 to this massive magnitude. And you're saying, did they want her to be more excited on day one? Maybe. But also, like, what was going on over there? How do you show the better moments? How do you find the better moments? How do you get a more chipper Aubrey early on? Ask her questions about her daughter or son. I actually don't know what she has. But ask her questions about her kid. How are you feeling being away from your kid? Is this harder for you this time? Give us those beats early on so that it's like, man, why is Aubrey hurting so bad? Aubrey's hurting so bad because she's not with her family. Because the last time she played, when she played three times in 4 years, she didn't have a family. She didn't care. Like, it was all about Aubrey. I'm going out and I'm going to try to win this game over and over again. Now she has a kid. That's the beats that you needed, because that's what could give you that better over arc of the season. And I think that, you know, that was missing. Again, I do think rewatching 50, there's going to be more satisfaction with Aubrey's win. I do. But it's still like, why does Jonathan Young have 12 more confessionals than Aubrey? Like, why? Especially when Jonathan Young was under edited on his first season. So it's not like Jonathan's so entertaining and so interesting. On 42, he gets overshadowed big time. But, you know, I always say, like, I try to keep, like, the politics and all of that out of this as much as possible. And I always say, like, they're going to give the confessionals to the more interesting people. But it is crazy when you look at that and you see that 18 of the top 20 are all men for in terms of winner edits. That's nuts. And it's like when you do start looking at the women who make up like higher levels on that, like in terms of percentages, Rachel Lamont is up there, but Sam Phelan was right behind her. Kenzie was there, but Charlie actually had more confessionals than her. Lucina was there, but I actually think Brad or Ty or something had more confessionals than her. Kim Spradlin was there. Troy Zane goes out of final eight, and I think finishes the season with, I can pull it up right now, he finishes the season with four fewer confessionals than her. So like all of these women who are even at the top are like splitting time with the biggest male character on their season for the most part as well, which is just very, very interesting to me. So like Aubrey's edit, how could they have made it more interesting? I don't know. Maybe she didn't give them the content at all, but you know, when I'm sitting there and I'm watching her fall to her knees after some emotion, realizing she's going to win Survivor, and I'm getting emotional watching that, I don't know if the general audience was getting emotional watching that. But you just had this character for 11 years. Like, if Colby Donaldson win the season, they knew what they were doing. They knew how they were going to tell that story. He lost by one vote. He made a dumb play in Australia. And now he wins? But you couldn't really like figure out what you wanted to do for Aubrey's. You started to ask the Michelle questions late, but like early on, there was nothing. I just find that interesting. I find that interesting. And, you know, again, for those who started watching post-COVID and you went back and binge seasons like crazy, you might not have even seen all three of Aubrey's seasons. But if you watch them too close together, you don't really realize how massive Aubrey was. You don't, because they didn't give her an edit in this season that would make you think she was ever as important to the show as she was coming out of Koh-Rong.
Yeah, I think that's something where you're sitting here after 50 and you're like, what an epic season, allegedly. Was it as epic as it could have been? And Aubrey doesn't feel like she's the worst winner possible. She's an old school player winner. But you are like, why am I not as satisfied? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's Aubrey's fault. And I think she played it as hard as she should and could. And I think that's something where if you can't recognize yourself in Aubrey or relate to Aubrey, you're probably like, she's trash. But I feel like there's a lot of people that would play the game like Aubrey if they were on the show that are like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
So I would not discount her. And like, is she going to be on Survivor 100 25 years from now? Hopefully they don't do that. But it's something where if we see her on 70 as Boston and Rob and Sandra head or something, I don't think it should be surprising. It'd be like, this is just what we're doing now.
Yeah. Aubrey, I don't think we ever see Aubrey again, unless she comes in, like you said, as like maybe like a mentor. I don't think we ever see Aubrey again. I think she's probably over it at this point.
I'm sure she's not loving listening to podcasts about 50 and everybody going, why the fuck is Aubrey?
Yeah. Or how did she win? What's the story? Like that gets old real fast.
She has $2 million and could probably win at least another $85,000 if she played again. So maybe that's enticing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny too, because like now when you talk about Rushmores and stuff, you mentioned this way at the beginning of the podcast, but Aubrey's placements are second, fifth, first, and then whatever the hell Edge of Extinction technically is, which I think technically she's 15th. I think which technically
is basically exactly or one off of what Parvati's is.
Parvati's was sixth, first, second, and then 17th, I think, or 16th.
Whatever Extinction is.
Yeah, whatever Extinction is. You know, Aubrey also probably deserves a little bit more credit than Parv because her first game was her most impressive game. And I always say your first game should count a lot more than your second game. Parvati's first game, everybody's always like, oh, she was so good. Parvati gets zero votes in a final three against pretty much anybody on that season. Like, maybe not anybody, but like, she's losing to Ozzy. She's losing to Yule.
Sandra, Becky, and Adam, or
but you can't have all that.
Gets the two of those people.
I think the other thing is too, like, would she have gotten the, I mean, I have to say this, would she have gotten the white vote? Because this is literally what that season was. She probably does get some, but Penner's not voting for her. So what's she going to get? Candace and Adam? Like, congrats. And people will say, well, she's never even getting there. She had no avenue to get there in that season. I honestly always say her first game is just so meh, but it showed Survivor what they wanted to see. And Parvati and Boston Rob are more similar to me. And I think the problem for Aubrey is she just won too late. But Aubrey now, okay, now look, let's look at Ceree Fields, right? She goes fourth, then third in a season where if it was a final three, she probably wins. Then 17th, then sixth, then sixth. And people are trying to figure out a way to put her onto the Mount Rushmore. Is Aubrey a better player than Ceree? Beat her twice.
I mean, just because she has a win, kind of.
And beat her twice.
Which is kind of controversial, but I think one other layer about this Mount Rushmore thing is, why is Rob guaranteed? Like, Rob has two wins as well. Like, the bank account went to his bank account.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying he won over Amber. I'm saying they won and used that money to build their house. Like, it's such a weird layer, and why people were so excited. And the fact that it happened single digits is insane, because, like, that's so early on in the history of the show. But Rob and Amber won All-Stars. Amber won All-Stars. But Rob also won another season. Mm-hmm. So it's like, he is the most behind Sandra and Tony, which actually have the checks, who's the closest two-time winner. I think Rob is closer than, oh, Sandra gets a different vote and it goes to Parvati.
Well, and the funny thing is with Rob also has the most blow-ups, right? Three times he doesn't make the jury. Rob has never been on a jury. No, he was once, only in Winners at War, because everybody got to hang around. So he didn't make the jury twice and made it in Winners at War because pretty much everybody on the cast was able to make the jury except for Sandra, because Sandra left. But, like, Rob has all these blow-ups. I get it from a strategic standpoint, from a personality standpoint. Like, Rob is famous. But that's why I always say, like, if you were to ask me gameplay-wise, like, Todd Herzog just won the EW bracket, and I think that that is fair. I do, because if you're looking at just one single game, I do think that his China game is the best game. I really do. That made me happy that the fandom actually understood that, and that was cool. You know, but it's like with Aubrey, why isn't Aubrey... I mean, personality-wise, sure, she doesn't necessarily hit character-wise, but is she a better player than Boston Rob? She was able to adapt better than he was? Because I said this at the beginning, she struggled with big personalities in her first season. She struggled with big personalities in her second season. Then all of a sudden, she was okay with the big personalities in her third season, which there weren't many of, especially on that Kama tribe, but she struggled with the small ones, like Victoria, like Gavin, like Eric. She didn't see that coming. And then what happens on 50? She goes to Coach and tries to talk to Coach and figure it out with Coach, because Coach is the leader of that tribe. She goes and she tries to make a relationship with Jonathan. She tries to make a relationship with Joe. She tries to make a better relationship with Ozzy. We see her talking to Tiff. Yeah, she butts head with Genevieve, but otherwise she did a much better job with the bigger personalities this time around. And that's a growth, and that's an adaptation. That's really impressive. So for me, I'm like, did Aubrey actually play a game that was worthy to get her into the Rushmore conversation? And people will say no, because it wasn't big and flashy and all that. But what is it that actually is the requirement for the Rushmore conversation? Because Aubrey, based on her placements, her amount of days played, the fact that if she wins that challenge in Edge of Extinction, she's in the final five a fourth time. I mean, that's a stupid game design, but still, like, should Aubrey be getting more serious consideration? And is it just simply that Aubrey's time on Survivor started too late and her win came too late? Because why isn't she in the same consideration?
And you mentioned this. I feel like this is worth doing a whole podcast by itself. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln respectively were chosen to represent the nation's foundation, expansion, development, and preservation. None of this shit was they're the four best presidents.
Yeah.
So anytime we talk about a Mount Rushmore, it is more about the legacy of something that's been around 100-something years, yeah, not just advertising this is what greatness looks like.
Yeah.
So if a Mount Rushmore is an outwit, an outlast, and an outplay, who embodies those the most? And then who's the most decorated money-wise or something? I think that's more of something like it. Or if it's, this is a new era man, an old era man, a new era woman, and an old era woman that we can do like blah, blah, blah. The other thing, I'm just going to take a shot on the way out of here. Based on what I saw in 50, I don't need to see new era all-stars.
No, I don't either. I don't think we will. I think that's why we're moving into the open era. I don't think we'll see a new era all-stars. I think Jeff's putting it behind.
Which is kind of crazy. But good for them. Because I it's like, do you want to see... like, I want to see two or three of the best ones, but I don't want to see tribes full of 41 through 49. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I think, and I think that it was a mistake in 50 was putting as many new eras as they did. Now, here's a question for you, Blake. This is my last question to you on our way out. Is Aubrey a better player than Boston Rob? Remember, this is the audio version only, Blake. We are not doing video, so nobody can see you deep in thought.
I'm thinking. Until Aubrey goes on Traders, I'll have no way to break the tie.
Shut up, dude.
I do think Boston Rob has an all-star win, kind of. Aubrey has the first season was better win over Boston Rob. Aubrey didn't get married to anybody on the show, so that's kind of a negative for her. But I do think...
Player. Is she a better player?
She's got the 1-2, just like he has the 1-2, and she has an extra 5. So... yeah. Aubrey would beat me more likely than Rob would beat me on a season of Survivor. Yes.
Is Aubrey a better player than Parvati?
Oh, we're doing this a lot. Now I get why you're like, this wasn't a final thing. This is a, here we go. I could vote out.
Just player.
I could vote out Parvati more easily than I could vote out Aubrey. Yes.
Okay. Now, a lot of people are going to disagree with that statement because, you know, she won the Australia versus the World and all that.
This is an audio podcast. Nobody can see you.
Yeah, nobody can see my air quotes. That's true. So we have, yeah, so Aubrey's game, truly, like, she has the same, she has a win just like Parv does. She has a second place finish just like Parv does. And her first game is the better game. Like, her game changers game. Like, I think what's also impressive about Aubrey is she went to Final Five twice on returning player seasons. That's really hard to do. And I know Parv played on two returning player seasons. She went out early in Winners at War, and everybody makes the excuse for her of, oh, well, it's because of that she got swap screwed, blah, blah, blah. Like, only Parv gets those types of excuses. Like, every other player, Tony was just terrible at Survivor on his season. It's like, okay, like, whatever. It's so funny how that goes. But like, Aubrey and Parv, I think, is a serious conversation if you're talking just player. And a lot of people say with 50, Aubrey wasn't in control of this. She wasn't doing this. She wasn't doing that. She played the game she had to play to get 8 votes at Final Tribal Council. Since no woman has ever won unanimously, Aubrey has the most votes out of any woman at a Final Tribal Council in the history of the show, which is 8.
Wow.
And like, Sandra and Tony... I'm not even going to ask the question with Sandra because she won her first 2 times. So it's like, what can you really say? Like, that is, you can't challenge that. And then Tony, everybody will be like, well, his second game sucked. Yeah. the biggest target ever, and he still almost managed to escape. They still voted out somebody else before him, and then he came back and won Winners at War by lowering his threat level. People say he didn't do anything in Winners at War. It's like he had to come in and literally go against all of his intuition. And that's what Aubrey did on this season. Like, Aubrey had to play the game that was going to allow her to get deeper. So I don't want to hear that, like, Boston Rob's a better player. Boston Rob could never adapt his game to the players around him. Aubrey could. So, like, if you're talking just player, I mean, there's a serious conversation needing to be had about Aubrey potentially being top 10. And I know people aren't ready for that conversation.
Aubrey is a top 5 player.
Potentially.
And she's not 6, but she's 5.
who would be your top 5? If you were talking just player, who's your top 5?
Just Rushmore and Aubrey.
But you just said that Rob is worse than Aubrey.
Uh-oh, now she's like 3. Uh-oh.
You know, because like when I go player, like I say Todd, Tony, Sandra, Chris Doherty. Could Aubrey slip in with Parv?
I think it's
worth having the conversation. I'd still put Parv above Aubrey, but I think it's worth having that conversation.
Who's the sports person listening to this? Because it is kind of like, I don't fucking like Chris Paul, but he went to how many All-Stars? And he's like one of the best point guards ever. But every time it comes to winning a championship, he never does that. So I get to go like, loser. But like, it's something where whether you like Aubrey or not, you can't put her lower than 5. What are you talking about?
I think she has to be in the top 10, and it just comes down to how you rank one-time players and what you do with Kim Spradlin.
But has every one-time player gotten the opportunity to play again if they wanted to do so?
No. Chris and Todd have not.
What do you mean about Kim Spradlin?
Because her first game is so dominant, most people consider that to be one of the top 2 or 3 winning games in the history of the show. But then her second season, she's just flailing. She is.
Well, they had competent
men. How much do you care about that second game?
They had competent men on 40. What was she to do?
I know, right? And then what do you do with Michelle? Michelle beat Aubrey. It's crazy. Like this is where the rankings become so arbitrary and so ridiculous. But I just think that right now there's so much conversation around Aubrey and Jonathan and all this, like with the end game and whatever. The conversation that's not happening is where does this slot Aubrey in? And I think it slots her in a lot higher than people want to admit because it wasn't the flashiest game. But this woman has a second, a fifth with a massive target on her back. A terrible performance, just like almost every one of these people has. Including Parv stands, and then a win on an All-Star season. I don't know.
And that's our talk about Aubrey.
That's it. No, it is. But so this is actually, so from the start of this podcast till now, I'd originally said this was coming out on Wednesday. This is coming out on Monday now. This is coming out immediately after recording. So well done, everybody. Tomorrow, Tegwith's live with Lauren O'Connell. That'll be on YouTube and over here. And then also, we're going to be doing Survivor 50 retrospective and then Survivor 50 legacies on Thursday. So plenty of stuff going on over here. But thank you all so much for listening. Spread the word that we're over here on these audio channels. This is going to definitely be a rarity that we would do an audio only. But Blake and I just wanted to jump on and chat, and we don't look good. So, you know, we just had to come in and roll through here. So
I got
to
find my microphone cord.
Yeah, you really do. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And patreon.com/thespecialists if you want to get some co-wrong coverage throughout the rest of the month and then into Millennials vs. Gen X. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next time.